not joining the party. I'm sorry, I just can't. I can't celebrate with you. I know, you love him. You've forgiven him. But I can't forget the look on your face the day he left. You were so miserable, devastated, distraught. You couldn't eat or sleep or do anything but just sit there for weeks. And you know, it wasn't easy for me either. It was hard for me when he left. I had to do all of his jobs as well as my own. And I lost my brother. To be honest, I felt abandoned too. I do get it. I know that you're just happy to see him again. But how long will it last? He left you. He took what he wanted from you, and he left you for dead. How long will it be before he does it again? How many times will you let him hurt you? I don't think I can let him hurt me again. He's only come back because things got hard for him out there on his own. And he thought it would be easier if he came running home to Daddy. He knew, worst case scenario, you'd put him to work, and he'd still get 3 square meals a day and a warm, cosy bed to sleep in at night. As for the best case scenario, well, look what's going on over there. I've never even seen such a party. So huge and extravagant. He's certainly getting all your love and attention now. It's just, if someone has to break your heart to get your attention, then your heart's going to be broken a lot.
My son, you're always with me. Everything I have is yours.
I try so hard to be good. I'm honest. I'm loyal. I'm reliable. And, well, they're the qualities I've learnt from living with you all these years. I guess I thought that was what you wanted from me. What you wanted from us. Look, I'm not saying I've never hurt you. No, I'm not perfect. Life's not like that. Everyone needs forgiving at some point or another. It's just some people like him, seem to need to be forgiven a lot more than the rest of us, as if by being forgiven, by messing up and then being forgiven, it provides them some form of comfort, that they'll be loved no matter what they do. And so they do it again, and again, and again. Maybe you don't mind, but I just find it tiring and frustrating. And hurtful, and, well, I hate to say it, but it just doesn't seem fair, because he's messing up so much and yet receiving all that love and forgiveness, and I'm here working hard every day, and, well, I guess I just have to ask you again, what does it take to get your attention? Are you like that guy who ignores the girl who ignores the guy who's nice to her because she finds the prospect of fixing the bad guy so much more appealing? She should know, she almost always gets hurt pretty bad. And the nice guy, well, he just gets ignored.
But my son, you're always with me. Everything I have is yours.
I mean, what kind of state would the world be in if everyone lived like him? Just doing whatever you want without a care about how your actions affect others. That's what he's like, him and millions of others just like him. The problem is, it's the rest of us, the good ones, the committed ones, I have to pick up the pieces. And then, when they finally come running back home, when they finally want our help and our support, because life was just too hard for them on their own, we're not even allowed to complain. Oh, no. No. Because then we would be the bad ones. Unforgiving, uncaring, unsympathetic. Well, who makes the effort to sympathise with us? That's what I want to know. Who makes an effort to see things from our way? To step into our shoes? No one. That's who.
My son, you're always with me. Everything that I have is yours.
Look at that party. What are they even celebrating? That he abandoned you? I get it, he's come back, but that doesn't right what he did wrong. He still lost all your money. He still left you and rejected you. Everyone celebrates when people like him do even just the tiniest thing good. What about those of us who are good every day? No one celebrates that. I remember at school, the naughty kids would get such praise if they finished a bit of work or sat still for 10 minutes or survived a playtime without punching someone. Well, I never punched someone. I always finished my work. I was never disruptive. I was good. And I got nothing for it. I do know that you love me too. And it's not that I think I've earned your love. It's not that I think I deserve it. It's just, well, he really doesn't. He left you. He abandoned you and rejected you. I can't just pretend that never happened. I can't forgive him and love him like a brother when he's spent so much time running away from you. He's hurt you and he's hurt so many others. This isn't how he should treat you. This isn't how people should treat you. This isn't how the world is meant to be, and I try and fix what's wrong. But I just feel so alone. Alone in my frustration. Alone in my obedience. Alone in loving you. Well, you. You just love everyone who rejects you.
But my son, you're always with me, and everything that I have is yours.
I'm sure you recognise the story, but just in case you didn't, let me read you the Bible version of that story, which I'm sure is going to be quite familiar. There was a man who had two sons. The older son worked hard and obeyed all that his father told him to do. The younger son liked to play and have fun. He wasn't interested in working. One day the younger son went to his father and said, "Dad, when you go, you're going to leave a ton of cash. Give me my half now." The father was shocked. He said, "Okay, it's your choice." So the younger son gathered all that he had and set off for a faraway country. And there he wasted his money on parties and wild living. Well, guess what happened next? Famine. And so he took the worst job ever. He'd spent all he had, and so he got a job feeding pigs. He hated it. Finally, he came to his senses. "My father's hired men have food to spare, and I'm starving," he said. "I'll return to my father and I'll say to him, 'I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men.'" So he headed home to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with love for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. "I'm no longer worthy to be called your son, father. I've sinned against heaven and against you," said the son. "Bring the best robe and put it on him," said the father. "Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf. We're going to kill it and have a party. Let's have a feast and celebrate. Because this son of mine was dead, and now he's alive again. He was lost, and now he's found." But the older brother was angry and refused to join the party. "All these years I've worked for you, and in all that time, you never even gave me one young goat to feast with my friends." "Look, my son," said the father, "you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. But we celebrate this happy day because your brother was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found."
Jesus didn't finish that story. He left it like that, with the older brother having refused to go in the party. We saw earlier how angry that older brother was, how unfair he felt it was that he hadn't, that he had done so much, he'd worked so hard, and yet his younger brother had run away and rejected his father, and yet was still receiving all that love and that massive party. So I want all of you to think a bit about how that story might finish. Do you think that the older son forgave the younger son and joined the party and rejoined the family? Or do you think he stayed in a sulk, never forgave the father or the younger son? And I'm going to come round and see what you might have to say about that, if we can get a mic to work, which might not happen.
I'm just getting red lights on these, sorry.
There we go. There you go. So does anyone think they might have an opinion? Did the older brother join the party and the family, or did he stay on his own?
I'd like to think he joined the party.
Right.
Sorry, we'll get there in a minute.
It's very loud.
I'd like to think he joined the party because he knew really that that was what his father wanted him to do, and he loved his father, and he wasn't about to start disobeying him and changing how he felt now.
Mm. That's a nice opinion. It's nice to think that he would join the party.
I just squeeze past. Thank you.
I'm an elder son, and I've always hated that story.
Your hand if you think like this, and you think that the older brother joined the party because he loved his father. Put up your hand if you agree. That's quite a lot of people. Anyone who disagrees? Anyone who has another opinion?
Yes, I think it would have taken time, but I don't think he'd have joined it there and then.
So you don't think he'd have joined the party, but you think he would have eventually forgiven him? Yeah. Any other opinions?
I think he'd have joined the party in the end because he felt hungry.
Oh. Oh, you don't choose to do ones next to each other. You go right from one end to the other.
I think if the father did truly love the son as much as he said he would have at least taken the time to work with the son and do his best to ensure that the son came back into the family.
Skip a song, Nathaniel, because we're not going to have time, okay? So the younger brother messed up and got things wrong in so many different ways, didn't he? But he remembered the most important thing, that he didn't deserve his father to be good to him. And yet his father was good to him anyway. And the older brother, well, he got all sorts of things right, really. But he messed up about one of the most important things. Because he somehow thought that his father owed him loads of good things. He thought he deserved them. And he thought that his brother didn't. And so he looked down on him. And when his father treated his brother well, when the father was generous to the brother, when he made the younger brother the centre of attention, the older brother got angry. He doesn't deserve any of that stuff, he said. I've been in your house for years. I've served on committees. I've been a deacon. I've gone to house group regularly. I've done my turn on the Sunday school rota. And now that youngster, who's never been to church in his life, saunters in and acts like he owns the place. And I need him to know that I'm the important one round here, said the older brother. We're going to take communion together in a few moments, and communion is when we sit down and take a close look at ourselves. That's something the Bible tells us to do, is take a good hard look at ourselves and remind ourselves that we're not here, none of us are here, because we deserve it. None of us are here because we're good enough. Every single one of us is here because Jesus is good enough. And if you like, makes us, puts us in a place where we can receive it. And so we're going to pray together before we come to take communion. And we're going to take the time to look at ourselves and to say sorry to God. To say sorry to God for the things that we do wrong, but also for if we've ever held on to that attitude that says, I kind of deserve this more than that person does. And as we come to pray, I'm going to invite you to stand with me if you're able. And we're going to do this in a physical way. So please, if you're able, would you stand up? And I'll explain how we're going to pray, and then we'll actually pray in silence, but I'll explain what's going to happen. I'm going to invite you to make four gestures with me as we come to God in prayer. And the first one is to clench your hands together. And as you clench your hands together, as you sort of act out holding something in your hands, imagine that you can hold in your hands in front of you all the times that you've ever let God down. All the times that you've ever said something or done something or even just thought something in your head that you know has hurt somebody or damaged your relationship with God in some way. Or if you've ever looked at someone else and some small part of you has thought, I deserve God to be good to me more than you do. Hold that in your hands too. And then when we've done that for a few seconds, we're going to open our hands out like this, and we're going to invite God to take those things away, because that's what he does. That's what he loves to do. Particularly when we say, hey God, I've got this stuff. Would you forgive me? And he loves to take it away. And then as we've done that, and with our hands still out, I'm going to invite you just to spread your fingers as you receive from God. And we're asking God, we're receiving from God rather, his forgiveness and his blessing. Because he loves to give us good things, whether we deserve them or not. And none of us do. But he loves to give them to us anyway. And then finally, we're going to put our hands together. And I know most of us don't pray like this, but it's just a way of symbolizing that we're saying thank you to God. And so we'll do that in silence. But I'll just give you a sort of a prompt, a reminder as we make the four symbols. So let's put our hands together and think of all those things that we want to hold out to God.